From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
In this episode of Fragmented, Kaushik and I sit down and talk about what we're labeling as Android micro frustrations. And these are the small things that slowly drive you to the brink of the crazy house as an Android developer. More aptly put, it's death by a million cat scratches. None of the things we talk about are game changers or kind of deal breakers for anybody as a developer at the end of the day. But when put together, it can make Android development, well, rather frustrating. And Kaushik and I wanted to share some of our opinions. While we do share a lot of what's really positive and great about Android development, we also like to kind of make sure this is a full circle and full stack development podcast where we're going to talk about everything that's good and bad. So with the good comes the bad. And that's what today's episode's about. Some of the things that frustrate Kaushik and I. And I'm sure you'll be nodding your head in agreement with some of them, get a few laughs, and well, we hope that it's entertaining to you and hope you enjoy your time. Thanks for listening.
You know what sucks? Waiting. Life is just too short to be waiting and waiting. If you're an Android developer and you need to run lint checks, unit tests, UI tests, check to see that the build doesn't fail because of a commit that you made, after every single commit, just think about it. You could run it on your local and then wait. But as we have established, waiting sucks. Well, Microsoft has a service called App Center that they'd like to promote and help us in this waiting problem. The whole point of using App Center is to automate my Android development lifecycle. So what does this mean? That means every time I commit my code to GitHub, I can just power on with my next feature, you know, go live my life, breaking things occasionally, and App Center will make sure that I, you know, don't go too crazy. In the background, it pulls the code from GitHub, runs the Gradle build, runs my unit tests, runs the UI tests, does this all without having to make me wait on my local machine. But App Center does more, though. It's a fully modular suite of services, so you can pick and choose the service that you need, and you can connect it to the tools that you already use. They have crash reporting, analytics, push services, a test device lab of their own, and you can selectively pick just the ones that you want. I particularly like the test device lab. They have some of the most common Android devices that you'll find in the market. So, you know, the Samsung devices that we all know are pretty prevalent and need to test our apps on but don't like to own personally. Well, they have the Samsung devices up there. It's exactly what you would expect. They run screenshots on every test. It's amazing. If you're looking for a CI service, I highly, highly recommend them. You'll get a host of other services to boot along with it. And the best way to do it is to just try. Head on over to appcenter.ms. My thanks again to Microsoft and to App Center for sponsoring today's show.
Hey Kaushik, have you ever had been in like a relationship where you see one thing that kind of bothers you and you don't really do anything about it. And then you kind of see another thing that you notice that starts bothering you, but it's not a big deal. So you don't really bring it up. It's not like a deal breaker. And eventually these things just slowly start building up and they really start irritating. Have you ever had that happen in any type of relationship at all?
I think we're all in a relationship right now that's been causing that problem recently.
Yeah, that's kind of the impetus for this episode today is how you and I have felt over the last many years. It's just been a slow buildup of tiny frustrations. We might even call them micro frustrations. We can coin that too. And these have just accumulated into like this mountain of almost rage lately that I have for some of the stuff in Android. And I find myself becoming really frustrated. And I feel like I'm in that relationship where I'm about to reach that breaking point. I'm about to explode because it's not one tiny thing it's not one big event that's making me upset. It's all these tiny things that are just like slowly scratching me to death. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. I think it's also like particularly insidious because if you've been in this relationship for a long time, right, what happens is you notice, you know all the good parts.
Yeah.
And so you keep reminding yourself of the good parts, which is great, which is how any good relationship should work.
Yeah, totally.
But eventually what happens is you tend to almost turn a blind eye to the inconsistencies and the things that don't work,
yeah,
right? And that's when, and that's like a very dangerous position to be in because like eventually what will happen is like you have the sea of like underlying sort of micro frustrations, as you put it well. And then one day, you know, there's a small gap in this sort of opening and they all just come gushing in and then you have a terrible day of work and then you're banging your keyboard and the next thing you know, you're cursing out loud. Right.
Yeah, and that's kind of putting it gently for me lately.
And the funny thing is what also made it all work, like the universe was sort of like agreeing with us, is there was this anonymous Medium post that was put up. And I thought it was very interesting because I know you and I have been talking about this a lot in the past. Like, obviously, we've been having different episodes and we've been having guests, so we didn't bring it up. But we thought, like, maybe this episode, we'll take some time to, like, you know, air our frustrations out, you know, almost like a Dr. Phil-like episode here.
Yeah.
Where we talk about this. This Medium post, we'll put a link in it. The funny thing with this Medium post is it's anonymous because there's, like, some expletives used in this Medium post, right? It's titled Fuck You Android Framework, which mm-hmm. is obviously not the most gentlest thing to say as an Android developer. But what interested me about this, and you can probably tell me what your thoughts were, is it has it almost has 5,000 likes. And almost all the comments are like, oh my God, thank you for saying that. Yes, this is really frustrating. Yes, that's a problem. Yes, nobody's speaking about it, right? And I think we've always been true to our feelings, right? If we don't openly go and criticize things. We don't look for things to criticize. But if you don't enjoy certain things or we don't understand it, then we're pretty open about calling it out,
yeah,
right? And I felt it was only fitting that in this episode we do that too, because these are feelings that we do share some of these feelings, right? So I think it would be an opportune time to sort of air these out.
I agree. And we'll link this article in the show notes. It's only a 2-minute read. I think it's 4 or 5 paragraphs long. You can literally read it like while you're standing in line somewhere. And it's just one of those things where you read it and like every sentence you're like, yeah, that's right, yeah. And then like it's just, and the way he has this gif at the end that I won't spoil for you, but it's a funny gif and it just kind of makes you laugh and be like, okay, all right, yeah, I feel the same way. So
it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
One of the things I think that we've tried to do here on the show a lot is always, like you said, talk a lot about the good things that are in the framework. We have also been very critical of things that we don't like, which is one of the reasons why we started this podcast too, because we felt like we wanted a place where people could voice some of their opinions about, hey, this thing sucks, or this is great, and here's why. And if this does suck, here's how we can improve it. And I do feel that some of the things we're going to talk about today, while we are going to complain about them, we're also probably going to say, hey, here's how it could improve, or if it's not something that can be improved, we may not have an answer, but it's just something that is a frustration and it should be vocalized because as some people who are in the community quite frequently, as you and I think it's important for us to not sugarcoat everything and say, hey, this is this great, you know, everything's puppy dogs and ice cream over here when it's not really.
Yeah, because that's how you set up walls and eventually you realize that, like, you know, the competition is taken over, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you keep saying it's not a problem and it really is a problem, eventually people are like, okay, dude, you keep dealing with that and I will just, like, go to the side here, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So let's hop right into it. That article that you showed me was interesting. What was some of the things that caught your eye immediately on it?
To kick it off, right, he says, horrible XML, right? And I thought this was interesting because for the longest time, I've looked at my iOS colleagues, right? And I've thought to myself, actually, you know what? These layout XMLs are not too bad. Like, they're pretty good because it's simple. I don't have to do, like, the actual calculation. Like, if I want something to show from the side, I don't know if you know this, but, like, on iOS, for the most part, I think, like, now things have changed. But for the longest time, you had to do, like, the math and say, okay, position this, like, you know, 70
pixels or points or whatever they use from the side. Mm-hmm. Like, that was how it was done, right? But Android from the get-go was always like, you know, almost like a CSS kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, I always thought to myself that, hey, these layout XMLs are pretty good. Like, you know, they work pretty well. But again, it's a very similar thing. Like, you know, over time, I felt that my frustration has built up. But in my mind, I've kept thinking, no, layout XMLs are fine. Layout XMLs are fine. So nothing's wrong with this. But then now, you know, my subconscious is like, damn it, this is really irritating, right? Let me quickly point out some of the meta things that I find, you know, very frustrating with XMLs. And I'd like to get your thoughts too. So I don't know about you, but one thing that I've found myself using a lot when I'm like developing, especially like layout XMLs, is the preview. Right? Like, you know, the preview that you see in Android Studio. Like, I swear by this. And I know there are like quite a few people who say, oh, you know, I don't use it. I just like, you know, code it up in XML and then I just run it. The problem is that's becoming increasingly difficult because if you truly want to see how something looks, you have to see it in a device.
Can't trust it.
And we'll get to this. Yeah, you trust and we'll get to this. But build times are really slow. And like to get my app onto a device, just when I want to like nudge something to check if like, you know, it's aligned properly, I can't be waiting like 4 minutes for that. That's ridiculous.
That's all you're waiting is 4 minutes? We'll get to that. That's right.
Yeah. So it's really frustrating that like, A, the previews don't work as well, right? And sure, I know how to work around this. This is a big theme in this, right? Like I know some folks are going to say, oh, but like, you know, if you do this, it'll work. I'm like, yeah. But the point is, A, I shouldn't have to do something like, I shouldn't have to work around it to get it to work the normal way. And secondly, this thing should just be dropped that simple. Like, I shouldn't have to know these, like, I shouldn't have to have, like, 6 or 7 years of Android experience to know that, oh, I should be doing this in order to get it to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
That really frustrates me because, obviously, there's, like, the tools thing, you can show the preview, but why is this so difficult? Why don't the bloody XMLs just show up so I can, like, get my job done fast,
right? Yeah, this is a problem that's been there forever. I remember the first time the preview editor came. I mean, they had the initial design editor for quite a while early on, and that thing was just, applaud the engineers for the effort, but I mean, it never worked that well.
Right, and this design, you mean like the UI where you can sort of like try to almost move it with the mouse and like almost like a WYSIWYG kind of thing, which, it's honestly, that I've never used that,
Yeah, and those never, ever work, and even constraint layout one is difficult at times, but we'll get to that later. The problem with the preview too is it early on is that there was a huge memory leak with it forever, and it may still be there. I don't know because I can't tell you why. And this is another thing we'll get into. But Android Studio sometimes after I leave the preview window open, I'm trying to edit some things or just get because here's my flow is I'll start editing an XML document and a layout. I'll have the mockup maybe of a JPEG or a PNG off to the side. I'm kind of like, all right, trying to make it look closely as I can. I'll get about 80% there. And at that point, all of my trust goes out the window. I'm like, okay, I'm 80% there. Like, it looks close, but I have no idea how it's going to render on a screen because this preview is completely not trustworthy. It's a liar, and it lies to my face every single time.
It lies.
Yeah, it's full of lies. And so then I have to, like you said, get it onto a device, onto an emulator or a device, and then actually see how it works. And so at that point, it's frustrating. The other thing that I have a huge problem with XML layouts is, too, is it's actually just the translation between XML into Java code. And that's all it is.
Java code. And it is just a pretty, I don't know if it's pretty anymore, but it's basically just a front end to generating Java code, which is an ingenious idea because in the end, everything's maintained the same. But you're totally right. It is not XML, it isn't stored as XML and rendered from XML, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody has to pay taxes, and in Android, we pay bracket tax.
So, right. I like that.
So, you know, it has to be turned into Java. And if the same thing goes, if I want to create a custom view, and now I want to use that inside of my application, qualify. I mean, there's ways around this, but there's fully qualifying things out. Maybe, and then of course the preview is just not going to render at all. And again, someone's going to say, well, you can get around that if you do X, Y, and you check if it's in edit mode. And like, I'm developing code to help me develop code. Like, I don't want to do that. Like, I just want to build this thing. And again, I know these are complex problems, but at the same time, I feel like at the end of the day, these are not things I should have to really focus on.
Can I take an extra moment and also complain a little more about the custom views?
Yeah.
The attribute sets, right? I know how to do this. Like, trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to, like, if I want custom attributes in my XML that I can just use in my custom view, I know how to do this. But I don't think it's, like, that easy to do. Or rather,
it's awkward.
it's awkward, right? I have to like, oh, I got to like declare attribute sets on the side. I got to make sure that I include them, you know, in my constructors. I need three different constructors in my custom view, one for each kind of thing. And if I miss out one, then that becomes like problematic. Then when you're totally right, when you try to use my custom view in XML, like at that point, I know many of my colleagues who are like, you know what, this is really painful. Forget it. Anyway, I'm going to like use it. So they don't necessarily have to deal with a lot of the preview stuff. But when I use a component, then obviously, like, you know, it's completely, because I rely on the design preview, nothing shows up, right? This is like a big philosophy that I have, right? If you want to encourage good practice, make it easy to do the thing that you want practiced in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, if you want people to do something, make it easy to do it, and they will do it. People are like inherently just like, you know, they are good people. They want the right thing. Everyone, like as developers, everyone wants to do the right thing. But if you make it like a 10-step process to get there, like, I mean, they're not going to do it. Like that's the simple truth, right?
The time it took me, the amount of time it took me to learn how to do custom attributes. And this is, people are going to laugh at this now because, you know, we've been doing this for years, but early on, like the documentation was like abysmal. Yeah. And doing custom attributes was like a complex thing back in the day. And I remember it took me a long time. You know, I wasn't developing for, you know, a year or two before I finally did some type of custom attributes. And I felt like a god at the time that I could do it. But I remember going through all these steps. I'm like, what are these attributes? Okay, why do I need an XML file for these IDs or these style settings? Why is it called style? But it's not style. It has to do with the width. I'm like, okay, but then then where does this R file come from? I'm like, oh, so that's generated off this. And this is didn't happen like overnight. It was like a lot of like trial and error. Like, okay, but now I add something new to the style file and now it doesn't get regenerated. Now it's not finding it. Now I have a red squiggly line in my IDE.
So these
are all the things that you deal with.
Wait, is it a problem with the build system? Do I have to like rebuild? Oh, maybe I should do a clean build. Oh, you know what? Maybe I should invalidate my project and restart. And like, no, that didn't work either. And then the last thing, you know, you missed like, you know, like one basic thing.
Exactly. And so it's just, it's like you said, if you want people to use it, it's got to be easy. It's got to be simple. And that's kind of the age-old problem is to make something simple, it's very difficult. And
right.
I get that. It's just one of these things. It's just like, wow, this, like when I'm writing this, I constantly, as of lately, as with many of the things we'll talk about today, just feel that this should not be that difficult.
Right. The other thing with XML layouts, right, is, and this is like a frustrating thing, and many people don't actually realize it, but if you want your app to work in a really good way, like, you know, where you're taking into account all the conditions, another thing is you need to have like, you know, for each density, you need to have like the folders.
Yeah.
If it's like a portrait mode or like a landscape mode and like you're being a good Android developer citizen and like handling a lot of that, you have multiple XML layouts now, right? And that gets frustrating then because then like you got to make sure that they're all consistent. The IDs in each of these layouts are the same. It just feels like, why is this so hard? Like this should not be this hard, right?
Yeah, it's no, not at all. And I don't know. I can't really... I'm just like
the more and more I think about the XMLs, I've been thinking like maybe this Anko thing is not such a bad idea after all, right? You know, where with Kotlin they programmatically allow you to build like your layouts. Have you thought about like that? Have you considered that as like maybe an alternative?
Yeah, so I did actually, what was it, last year or a year and a half ago, I don't know, sometime around then, is I wrote an article called Getting Started with Kotlin and Anko on Android, and actually developed some stuff in Anko. And it was a little bit, it was different. And mainly what I mean by that is, the thing that I mean by it is you were writing in a language inside of the actual Java file or Kotlin file, excuse me, because it was Anko. And so you're, you know, I'm writing this linear layout and then I have these things that are indented inside of there. And then I have this text resource and it felt a lot like, have you ever wrote anything like the Jade at all from like Node.js?
I have. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So it felt very, felt very similar to that style of developing. Like I was just like kind of just describing what I wanted it to look like. I didn't need to have to provide a bunch of angle brackets. I didn't have to do a bunch of stuff. I did find it a little weird because I had to provide, I still had to interact with the ID, you know, the Android resource system. We're still tied to that legacy system of Android for the resources and the IDs and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, what I did find is it was kind of refreshing because it was right there inside of my application. I felt like I had my activity or my fragment, and then I had my layout right there with it. Like, I didn't have to go over to another file to look at my layout. Like, it wasn't comprised of all these different things. It was all just right there. So that was a good thing. And then as of this weekend, I spent all of my free time this weekend actually diving into Flutter. And Flutter does the same exact thing. You actually define your view right there in Dart. And if you've ever written, you know, any C style language like Java or JavaScript or, you know, even Kotlin, Dart is super easy to pick up. I mean, it's almost exactly the same. And so I'm writing this code right here, all of my layout in line, and it was much easier. Now we'll get into some of the layout stuff later, but for example, writing stuff in Flutter was way easier. Like if I wanted to provide a drawer, I just created a new drawer object and assigned it to the drawer attribute. And then my drawer was there. Mm-hmm. If I wanted a new app bar, like I just gave it a new app bar, like a new app bar object, and it was there.
When was the last time it was that simple?
I wanted to change the color of the app bar. I just said, hey, app bar, your color is now purple. And it changed it to purple. I was just like, whoa, this is magic. And, then I stopped. I'm like, no, this is not magic. This is how it should be.
Right.
So I think there's more of those declarative styles like this of where I'm actually just kind of, I don't know if it's declarative or proper word, but it's right there in line with your application. I really like that. It's a lot different than what we're used to, though. Have you played with Anko or anything like any of these style of...
I've looked at Anko, but again, this was very early on. And I've been having like a lot of discussions with my colleagues at work where we're like, hey, maybe we should like rethink this. Like we shouldn't like be quick to sort of like dismiss it as something that's not maintained by Google, just because along the same lines, everyone's frustrations have been increasing, right? It isn't as straightforward as we want it to be. And like we're slowly drifting towards that. I mean, and if folks are interested, like, you know, you and I know we can like talk about a whole episode just on that aspect. So if that's something that folks are interested, they can always like hit us up and, you know, we can probably talk about it more.
So let's dive in a little bit deeper into the layout stuff for a second. What do you think about constraint layout?
Well, actually, ironically, I was always of the opinion that like constraint layout is great in theory, but it doesn't work. It is like basically bullshit, right? Like it doesn't work to begin with, because I was like, if I have to build this like in any, it's the same philosophy, right? If I had to build this with just like a linear layout and a relative layout, this would actually be simpler. And this isn't a familiarity thing, right? It's just I don't understand the constraints that I have to add like in constraint layout. I don't understand the numerous terminologies. There's chains, there's barriers, there's bias, there's linear groups. I can learn this, but here's the thing. I'm not interested in learning it. I just want it to be easy. And I know this was the mandate initially with constraint layout, right? Mm-hmm. But I will say this, though. What I have been doing, and one of my colleagues actually mentioned this to me, right? He's like, no, go ahead and use constraint layouts, but think of it as a relative layer. Don't use the design editor just yet. You know, type the constraints. As long as you understand what some of those constraints are and you just type it in XML, it becomes much more easy to deal with. And I've actually found constraint layout pretty good now. I'm using constraint layouts more and more now in cases where I feel that I would have maybe used like a bunch of like linear layouts or relative layouts. And all I do is I just think of it purely in terms of it being a relative layout in my XML, right? And I type the constraint, like a constraint left to left off or to right off. I type that out. This isn't ideal. Like, you know, if we had something that just like did that automatically, it would be better. But I actually am hopeful about constraint layout. I feel there's a lot of like interesting stuff coming. And I feel even though constraint layout right now, I feel does get a lot of like hate because it isn't as easy to use. I'm actually very optimistic about the direction that constraint layout is going, ironically, given like, you know, this is like a ranting episode. What are your thoughts?
I'm the same with you. I think all the terminology is the worst part of it. It's confusing.
Yeah.
I feel this is one of those situations where, as you said, engineers have built this. It's a UI built by programmers for programmers. It's difficult to use. I feel like there should be some different terminology thrown in there. And the problem that I really have with it is I'll still be in the XML and I'll do to, you know, top to the bottom over whatever, and I'll set everything in XML because as soon as I get into the WYSIWYG editor, I'll drag something over, I'll go back to XML. All my XML is just turned into complete absolute garbage. Someone took beat it with a stick. It looks terrible. Like all these things are moved. I'm like, I don't want that there. That doesn't belong there. But that's where constraint layout feels like it should go, and that's what it will do. That's what WYSIWYG editors do. And so drives me nuts. And the big thing about that is I'll get it almost 80% there. I'm like, okay, now the last thing is I got to just make sure that this one is directly below this one. This layout's below this one. And I'll drag this little chain or I'll make this connection and I'll look at it inside the app and something is just like magnetized to the top of the view for some reason. I'm like, how or why is it doing that? And then, you know, before, you know what, I'm digging into places, asking on Twitter through various Slack channels, what's going on here? And someone's like, oh, you need to set a bias on this with a proper weight, you know, and then make sure that you have, you know, a chain set up over here. And I'm like, what? And then at that point,
you're like, okay, I will do that. Delete constraint layout, add nested linear layouts. Boom,
that's
done.
Exactly the point. And then I'll look at it. I'm like, I just burned 3 hours on this stupid layout that should have taken me 10 minutes to build with these rudimentary objects. And that's where I get upset. And then I think I'm like, all right, are my users going to benefit that much from this visual layout? That's a question for the implementation. But at the same time, at 90% of the time, it's no. And so that's where that's my problem with it. I think the goal of it is great. The performance of it is going to be great. Implementation right now and the ease of use has a lot to be desired.
Right. And it is early, and I know the team that works on constraint layout is like a really badass team. So I'm hoping we are going to quickly get to a point where it becomes de facto, and a lot of like these annoyances that we have right now would hopefully go away.
Just hat tip to the team and some of the authors of constraint layout. I've actually spoken to them on various channels. They are super supportive, super helpful. They want to make things easier. So I do give it to them, and I'm glad they're trying to make things better. So again, just voicing concerns that it's just difficult.
Now, you messaged me on Slack one of these days, and you were talking about build times. So tell me, what do you think about your build times, Don?
This is one of the things that makes me want to not be an Android developer anymore, is a build
times.
Wow,
that's a strong statement. Yeah.
I am the person that back when I was doing in Windows development, I created a shortcut inside of my Windows directory called N. And the N was a shortcut for Notepad. And the reason why I created that is so I wouldn't have to type Oatpad. So I just had to type N. Because the amount of times that I open Notepad in a day, same with Sublime Text right now, is literally hundreds of times. Because it's a place where I put stuff and I move things around. It's like a temporary holding place. And all programmers do this. I'm the kind of person that removes, what is that? I don't know. 7-8 characters out of my day times 80 times, you know, 100 times. Right. To me, that builds up to a couple minutes. And those couple minutes over a course of time is a lot. And if I do that with all of the things that I do, I end up getting, you know, half an hour, 2 hours back every day of weird things that take a lot of time. For example, this morning, I was calculating the time that it took for me to brew my tea when I first got up and realized that it's taking too long, in my opinion. It was taking about 24 minutes from the time I woke up to get tea in my hand. I said, no, I got to get this to under, you know, 8 minutes. And so, like, I'm on Amazon this morning researching, like, all right, what are the fastest boiling water tea kettles that I can find? Like, that's how obsessed with time I am. Like, I don't want time to control me. I want to master time is always my goal. And so when Gradle, and I sent you the Slack and I posted on Twitter, a Gradle build took over an hour. And I wasn't sitting there watching it. I fired it off. It was running for like 5 minutes or so. I was like, it's lunchtime. You know, I'm going to go grab something to eat. And so I left my desk and I went and got something to eat. And I came back about an hour later and I sat down and it had completed and it said like 60 something minutes. And I was just like,
What?
Normally, if it gets over like 10 minutes, 12 minutes, I'll usually kill it and figure out what's going on. These are the things that, I mean, it's completely normal for me to take, 10, 15 minutes for like a full build. Now, especially if something really gets whacked out in Android Studio, I've refreshed my Gradle dependency, something's not syncing for God knows what reason. And then I have to clean my Gradle cache. That doesn't work. Now I'm going to go delete my Gradle cache folder inside of my root directory. That doesn't work. Then I have to go invalidate my caches from Android Studio. And every time I do this, I end up doing all of them at once. So I've just basically, I have a file called Gradle Nuke that just nukes all these folders. And then I invalidate the caches on Android Studio. And at that point, I have to sit there and wait for it to reindex for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah. Oh my God. That part too. Yeah.
So, you know, at the end of the day, it's like these, the build times are crazy. And we just had an episode about this on multiple modules, how it helps speed up build times. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we could have spent a lot more time discussing some of the things you have to be leery of. Is it does say it's going to help you speed up build times, but I don't think there's any guarantees. Because
Right. The dependency chains matter.
Yeah, the dependency chain totally does matter, because I may change one file that's used in annotation processing, and because of the dependency chain, I now have to rebuild the entire world, and I'm sitting there for 25 minutes because, oops, I changed this Dagger file, or oops, I changed some other annotation processor, and now I'm sitting here looking at something, chunking away while I could be doing something different, which I do. I have a list of tasks that I do, but it's just very frustrating, and it breaks your flow continually, and it's just the thing that drives me the craziest inside of Android. What about you?
Plus one on almost everything that you just said, right? The annotation processing thing that you said is pretty interesting, because I think my most recent frustrations with build times have been around that, right? We use Dagger, we use Butterknife, mm-hmm. we use a lot of these annotation processing libraries.
Data binding.
Data binding, and we love it, right? Like, all of this is good stuff. But all of those were like almost tools to help avoid, if you think about it, like most of these tools help avoiding boilerplate.
Yep, totally.
That is at the crux of why we tend to use these tools. But I don't know if the Android build system was, you know, from the ground up thought to handle annotation processing well, right? Because there's always problem, right? It's apt or capped. Now with Kotlin, what happens is because you have one more sort of layer in between, it becomes impossible. And I don't know recently if this is like an Android Studio problem, or the Android Gradle plugin problem, or like Gradle in general. But I've found, like, especially with things like Butterknife, like things don't get generated properly, right? So I run a build.
Yeah.
What happens is it says, oh, sorry. Like, it'll point to like some, with annotation processing, the other problem I've found at least is many a time it won't fail at the area that it's supposed to fail. It'll fail earlier because, mm-hmm. you know, that's the first time it doesn't see a dependency that was expected out of annotation processing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the annotation processing failed, but the point of failure is the first call site to what would be expected from an annotation processor, right? And so you don't exactly know why. And so it's come to a point where I'm like, oh yeah, that's something has failed in the annotation processing. I'll just go clean, remove like the cache, do a rebuild, and then it should probably work. And I found myself doing this, and I'm like, my God, like this is not how it's supposed to be.
No.
What happened to like the time where like, you know, we had like incremental builds? And I mean, don't get me started with Instant Run. I think it's almost like a running joke now, right? Like everyone knows Instant Run doesn't work. And I applaud the team for trying. They heard us, right? Like we said, this is a big problem. They said, yes, we want to try and address this. And I think the intention is there. I think the tooling team like with Android is like one of the best teams out there. They have the right intentions, but the problem still exists. Like I've spent a ridiculous amount of time on our code base making sure our build times were down, right? I've studied this. I've tried to shave off seconds here or there, and I'm like almost ruthless when anyone like commits code to the code base saying, hey, are you sure this is not increasing our build time? I'll run the build times myself. I was like, oh, went up by a few seconds. Like, make sure like, you know, something's wrong here. Like, this is where we can optimize here. Let's like not try to increase it. With Kotlin, I said, you know what, build times are going to increase, but it's a worthy trade-off. And I still believe that to be true. But it still is frustrating because builds take a long time. Even if I just change a small thing, I still see myself waiting like a couple of minutes, which is ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
right? Because then what happens is I was like, well, I think this condition was not entirely right. Let me change this. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I will wait for 3 minutes, 4 minutes for that to build. And then once it deploys to the APK, right? And then don't get me started on emulators. Like emulators, for some reason, like even like the Intel Hexam emulators now don't seem to work like the way that they're supposed to, right? So I hear you. I think there's something really... And I hope it's maybe just like a period, like a phase of transition, because we have a lot of like these new players now. But I don't know what it is. It is very frustrating that our build times are still so long, right? Which is why Flutter is also so appealing. The fact that I don't have to wait that long.
Mm-hmm.
Build times are a real nuisance at this point, and like they're like a productivity killer.
They are. This is the number one thing that drives me nuts. It actually gives me anxiety, the fact that I have to even think about this, because I work in other languages a lot and like I don't have to deal with much of this stuff. In fact, I hear a lot of JavaScript developers will claim like, oh man, NPM install takes forever. And I'm just like, I look at him like, have you ever worked with Gradle and Android? I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, that is like a fraction of a second compared to what we got to deal with. So it's just super frustrating. And I think the annotation processing is probably the biggest offender. I know of teams that have had engineers dedicate weeks of time trying to lower their build times. And we have discussions internally on the teams that I'm part of like, hey, if we add this library, what will it do? Will it increase build time? So very similar discussions you have. And if it's going to negatively impact build time, no, it's not allowed. We're even contemplating removing things because it adds too much build time. All right, data binding is one of them. Like, that's a huge amount of time we spend inside of that data binding, build annotation processing. And on that same topic, for example, like, you run into these weird things with the build process where you'll get this error. I mean, I don't know if this happens to you, but you'll get this compilation error and you'll look at it and you're like, that makes no sense whatsoever. And you end up
all the time
after an hour or two of digging into it, it's a red herring. It's something completely different. And I had this happen a couple of weeks ago, and a teammate of mine who've had on the show here, Phil Brault, I pulled him in because I was racking my brain. I was like, I don't know what's wrong. Like, I'm getting a bunch of data binding errors. There's nothing wrong with data binding. I've checked all the files. I've not changed anything in data binding, yet it's blowing up. And we end up finding out that because I had changed something in a Dagger file, compilation was failing down at the Dagger level, but that was because that was failing, it was affecting data binding. So data binding couldn't complete. So now we got these errors in data binding, which then we overflowed the Java error count limit on the compiler. So we couldn't actually...
What?
So we had to go into the compiler options inside of Gradle and say, hey, allow this to show 500 errors. I think it's 100 that it shows by default. Allow it to show 500 errors. And then as soon as we did that, my error was like error number 109. And it was like, oh, Dagger can't find this one thing here. And I'm like, oh my goodness,
what?
I wasted this. Like, how do you even know this? Like that's like, what the, how? Like, so hat tip to Phil again. He's like the master of Android Studio and all these crazy things that we've talked to him before, but that's just completely, it's one of those things where you finally fix that error or that red herring, you fix it, you commit it. And then you just like, you get up and you want to flip your desk over and walk out.
Right. Well, what about things like Buck and Bazel? Have you thought about those?
I have thought about
alternative build systems.
You know, And we came from an operating system. It was built for a camera. That's what Android is built for. It was built for a camera.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now it's on a phone. And we've kind of shoehorned all these things together inside of here. And we're talking about build systems. At first it was Ant. And then a lot of us went to Maven. And it was kind of like, you were a weird person if you were running on Maven because, Google didn't say use Maven. But then they had some things that ran Maven. So it was kind of weird to see. Use Eclipse, but hey, we use IntelliJ internally. Don't, do as I say, not as I do thing, which is another gripe. But and then we went to Gradle, and Gradle's kind of solving this problem. And I think Gradle is a good tool. All these are good tools. They have good intentions. You're trying to manage our dependencies, which is a hard problem to do. It's just we're now running into new problems. And now we have Bazel and we have Buck. And I think this right here is actually shows the positive quality of an open ecosystem like Android, and the fact that companies can go develop their own solutions. If what they have now doesn't work, they can go develop their own. And again, this retorts back to the other comment that I have is like, well, why do we have this problem? Like, we shouldn't have this problem. If Bazel or Buck is faster, then why don't we move over to that? Is it actually that much better? And if it is, then maybe we should evaluate that. So there is pluses and minuses. The gripe is, why do I have to look at that if the default tool is there? Should the default tool already do that? If not, shouldn't we switch default tools? But the power of the open ecosystem does allow me to switch if I want. So what do you think about it? Are you trying either one of those, or what's your thought on them?
No, I did look at like Buck, right? And like, we had Gotham some time back. I did explore, okay, Buck, and I was like seriously considering it at the time. But it did, if I remember right, at the time it didn't do Kotlin, and then I was like, well, the shift would require way more effort, and we're not as big a team as we would like to be. So I was like, well, I don't necessarily know if it's the best use of my time right now. So I decided then, I'll just like shelve that. And build times are kind of like annoying now, but again, just thinking about the effort of like moving to a new build system is like not that fun for me right now.
Yep.
And also, I do hear there are like more improvements coming. So I'm just like keeping my fingers crossed and hoping, like, you know, this bubbles up to be a big enough problem where, you know, like the folks on working on like the Android Gradle plugin, like, are listening and, you know that this is a problem and, you know, they're on top of it. So that is my hope.
Yeah, hopefully it gets better. So,
okay, so stepping back, we've talked about like the build system and like the tooling. Let's maybe talk about the core components, right? Because there are like some things that don't work as well, right? The fragments thing right now, it's like, I think everyone understands, right? Like activities and fragments. But the other point to think about is there like, should we maybe think about a different way? Like, do all other frameworks have to deal with this? I know Android developers complain a lot about like the life cycles with activities and fragments, right? I haven't heard as many complaints from iOS, which is not to say that they don't have a life cycle. I believe they do have a life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I think it works better because I don't hear them complaining as much.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts around that? Is that true? Like, what do you think?
I don't hear a lot of iOS developers complaining too much about life cycle at all. And like you said, there's probably some things that we don't hear much about. But Android's life cycle is just, it's a mess. And the fact that we have to worry about it makes me want to pull my hair out. And this is in regards to, you know, configuration changes. I want to turn a screen sideways. Like, why do I have to manage that myself? I'm just turning the screen sideways. So now I understand what Android's doing. It's destroying everything because it's got to rebuild it because we don't know the orientation. We don't know all this stuff. It's got to rebuild it. But I feel like all that stuff could kind of be handled already for me. Like,
and I mean, can we also like step back and talk about why do we have to manage state? It's 2018, right?
Yeah.
Again, like you rightly said, I understand why we need to be doing this. On save instance state, I understand why that needs to be done. If your object is too big, oh, well, store it in a local database or like in a local file. Trust me, I know all of the standard interview questions. I understand why it needs to be done. My point is, but I don't want to do those things, right? I understand why the Android framework expects me to do that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right way, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's 2018, right? Like, why isn't this just taken care of by the system? Like, do I really have to know and worry and like account for all of these weird quirks that exist in the system? And I think a common way of justifying this is like, oh, but like, you know, Android started out very early on. Android started out with the objective of being open and like allowing everyone to work. And like, you know, obviously over time, there's like depth that has been collected. And I'm like, well, that is true. That is true. I understand that it allowed the ecosystem to grow, but it's 2018 and it's time to collect. I want to collect my time back, right? I have invested in the system and like, you know, I've borne all of these inconsistencies, but do you think maybe it's time to, you know, start fresh and say, actually, you know what, we're going with this approach and you don't have to manage state. You know, that's the kind of thing that I feel like we should be thinking about too. Right?
I've been thinking about this a lot. I don't think I've ever even talked to you about this. So it's the first time I'll say it out loud is that I've been contemplating a lot about the mobile ecosystem over the years. And I've always been a believer in that one day, you know, JavaScript will come in or something will come in and kind of disrupt a lot of stuff. And we're seeing stuff in React. And so that's not a conversation that I'm about to have here, but it's more of a conversation of, I don't know if Android is the end all be all solution. I don't know if iOS is, because I feel like Android has been cobbled together. And I feel like we're starting to, you know, a lot of the cracks in the armor are starting to really show here and things are really getting worn down. And what I mean by this is, you know, being that I run Castor.io and I've written books and stuff like that, I educate a lot of people on Android development. And one of the biggest things that I hear all the time is like, why is this so complex? Like, why is this so difficult? Like, this one thing works this way, but over here it works differently. But, oh, if I have an activity, then it has this life cycle. And if I have a fragment, it has this life cycle. But then if I have multiple fragments and I rotate a screen, well, the fragment manager hops in and takes in, well, how can I find that? Well, go look at this diagram on the Google Developers blog and look at this other diagram over here. But then you also have to understand that this thing could happen. That's just like, at one point you're just like, wow, this does not seem like it was, you know, built for its intended solution. Like, it seems like we're just kind of like bolting things on to kind of band-aid and fix it together.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly how it is, right? We are so deep right now in like, you know, the jungle that we're seeing the trees and like we've just missed the forest.
Yep.
And I feel even us, like, and we do this too, right? Like you and I, like, well, oh, it's fine. Oh, you just have to do this thing,
yep.
Right? I find my, I I've caught myself multiple times explaining this to like people, especially like at Instacart now. Like, we encourage a lot of like, you know, even like web developers to come and like, you know, contribute to the mobile side, right? And it is kind of ridiculous, because when I talk to other Android developers, like, it's almost like, oh, yeah, I gotcha. Like, I know, yeah, we need to do that. Yeah, thanks for, like, pointing that out, right? But when you talk to people who are, like, building, and they ask you why, you stop to think, like, actually, yeah. Why?
They're
like,
so wait, why?
I have to do this? Like, why do I have to do that? They're like, well, it's the Android framework, you know, this allows us to do blah, 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 blah. In the end, well, I want to achieve this objective. That is not achieved very easily without you like jumping through two hoops, which mm-hmm. is like, you know, the sad state of affairs. And yeah, I feel that's a big problem. Like, we've kind of lost sight of the forest, and like, we're, you know, looking at the trees right now, and we're trying to convince ourselves that, oh yeah, the forest exists.
And this is one of the reasons, again, why I feel that we're seeing so much uptick in movement in React Native and things like Flutter and so forth.
Yeah.
Because you hop in there, and I don't have to worry about a lot of that stuff. Now, of course, that comes with trade-offs as well.
Mm.
But a lot of stuff, true, I don't have to worry about. And a lot of that frustration is gone, especially for new folks who come in. They don't have to ask these weird questions. They can kind of code how they've been coding, and it just kind of works. And that's what a lot of folks are after. They want to build something. They don't want to have to fight developer tools. They don't want to have to fight the framework. They don't have to figure out why they can't change the status bar to be transparent instead of a dark color, you know, and
fight
3 hours in some weird style file. So it's just
oh my God. Can I tell you about one thing that like a recent requirement that I've had about that?
Let's go.
That's so frustrating. So one of our designers came with a requirement where they're like, hey, this activity should like sort of almost take over the screen. So like it go like the system bar, the system bar mm-hmm. being the thing on the top, right? They said, like, could we maybe make that transparent? So, we have this UI effect where like the screen takes over and it almost seems like a full bleed screen, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that should be easy enough. And so there are like certain flags for it, right? I can paste it in the show notes. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. It's maybe translucent control or like, you know, full screen control or something. I'll make sure to add the flags. I did that. I'm like, oh, that should make sense. But what happens is then like the navigation bar, which is the bar at the bottom, also became transparent.
Oh.
Right? And I'm like, because that's a problem, because this screen has like a big fat giant button at the bottom, right? And so when I'm using a layout, I just say like gravity bottom or whatever, like, you know, the equivalent is, and it shows up in the bottom. And I'm like, well, this worked on my Pixel, because on my Pixel, for some reason, like the whole screen was used, right? My Pixel 2 XL.
Yeah.
I tried on another phone, you know, and this is like the Nexus 5 that I have, like a test device. The button is hidden behind a transparent navigation bar. So I can never hit the button, right? And I'm like, oh, damn it. And then, and you know, you do your like regular Stack Overflow, and then people are like, oh, you know, you should use Fit System Windows. I'm like, okay, I'll use Fit System Windows. It doesn't work. They're like, oh, no, you got to use Fit System Window at like, you know, the outermost layer, because the way this Fit System Window thing works is it looks at the closest parent, right? I'm like, oh my God, that's like a pain. Then I'm like, you know what? Can I find if a navigation bar exists or not, and I'll just do the thing manually. I'll move the stupid view myself, you know, if I have to. Like, and it doesn't work that well, because on KitKat, apparently, where they use the system, sometimes you don't have like a navigation, like it doesn't tell you if there's like a navigation bar, right? Like, you don't get that response properly. But after a certain APIs, you do, right? And then I'm like, well, what happens to APIs before that? Like, you know, oh, then. And I kid you not, like one of the blog posts I read said basically, you know what, this is really tricky to handle in KitKat. So add a custom, like, you know, in your styles or your themes, add a custom one for just KitKat. And in that, specify that you always want the navigation bar to be opaque. Just don't, it isn't worth dealing with it. Just like, you know, tell your designers and like, you know, make peace with your designers and like ask them to like deal with it. And I'm like, my God, this should not be this complex.
Should not.
All my designer asked me was like, hey, can you make that system bar transparent so it like makes it appear like it's a complete takeover, right?
And imagine telling someone new to the system, someone who's coming over from a web development background, or someone who just got out of college mm-hmm. who's not really done much development, you're like, I need you to change that. Like, and you tell them, well, here's all the 80,000 steps you need to go through, and it probably won't work anyway. They're probably going to look at you like, why? What? Why?
Yeah.
Like, why is it so difficult? And that's the question that I find myself Like when I'm doing that, I see myself on Stack Overflow. I see myself reading this stuff. I see myself putting my hands on my face and then just like leaning back in my chair, looking at the ceiling, taking a deep breath and just going, what the fuck?
Right, exactly. Because this stuff should not be this difficult, right? Either, and sometimes I feel it's, you probably just don't give me the functionality. Like this whole, I'm beginning to think like maybe sometimes like making things customizable like mucks with things a lot, mm-hmm. right? Another problem I have is like with custom fonts, right? You would think custom fonts is easy, right? Like for the longest time, we had Chris Jenkins, God bless him. He had his like calligraphy library, yeah. right? That worked for the longest time. That's great. Now we have it like support, like the support library has introduced native custom fonts. That works well. You know what doesn't work? What? Certain OEMs basically override your system fonts, right? And this is really annoying because what happens is sometimes when you have a screen, exactly, right? Sometimes you have a screen and you want, because like, you know, in our app, like there are certain parts where we think very deeply about this. We're like, hey, if you use a custom font, especially one of those balloony fonts, this is not going to work because there's a lot of like content that needs to be fit and mm-hmm. this is the most important part of your screen. We don't want custom fonts in the app. It's almost like we want to override fonts saying, no, always just use this, right?
Yeah.
So one way to think about it is like, oh, maybe if I use custom fonts in the app and I force this font, it'll just be the regular Roboto throughout the app, right?
You hope.
You know what? It doesn't work for certain OEMs. And we have tried it because certain OEMs, for some strange reason, they say, no, we will take care of, like, you know, and we'll drop down at a much lower layer and like we'll take over like the fonts, right? And that's like frustrating because you're like, yes, you were given this customization, but damn it, it was not meant to be used that way, right?
Yeah.
And I know like Amanda and like a bunch of them have like posted this on Twitter where like they override the system Android white color to be like half white, right? I'm like, see, these are some of the times where I think this being open is not an advantage for us. Like,
yeah.
you know, because in the end, as developers, I honestly don't care if you're open. I just want my app to work well, right? And I don't want to have to spend like 20 hours debugging this like one weird thing that happens to be because like some OEM like managed to screw up.
That would be like using Chrome and Chrome just says, hey, you know what? You're going to use a div. We're just going to make all the corners on your div round. That's because we think it's cool.
Yeah. You know, because we think that's how this should be.
You know, nobody would fly with that. No one would be like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, Chrome says it should be round. It should be round. Let them be round. And you go to Firefox and you're like, you know, they got stars on the corner. Like, star. No, stars, man. And you go to, you know, whatever browser. You go to some DuckDuckDuck browser if they have one. And all of a sudden everything's like invisible because it's, you know, it's a super privacy browser. And so... like this stuff that doesn't you don't see that on the web. I mean, there are weird things in the web that here and there with browser specifications and JavaScript, but it's like you can't. What that feels like is you can't control your full design aspect of your application. Like, and it's kind of random, and that's the worrisome part. Is like you really don't know what you have control over. Like, it looks good on this device, and there's no way you can test on all the devices. It's impossible. So you try, you have a handful of devices that you feel are going to match your user base based upon any analytics you have. So, all right, well, if it works good on these, it should work pretty good for everybody else. And then when you're out at a random, you know, dinner, you know, engagement and you talk to someone like, oh, where do you work? Oh, you know, and you might say, hey, I work on Instacart. Like, oh, I use Instacart. And you're like, oh yeah, cool. And they pull up the phone and it's some weird phone that they got somewhere and they pull up your app. Yeah, check this out. You're like, oh my God, that looks terrible.
I kid you not. That has happened. That has actually happened to me multiple times. I'm like, oh, it hurts. It hurts so bad.
And then you're like, what phone is that? And they're like, oh, it's something that I got off Amazon. It came from the Philippines and it was put together in China with some parts from Europe. And you're like, what?
Here, I will give you $100. Please buy a better phone.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's, you don't have full control. And it's just frustrating. And I think this continues to happen as you get further into the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And I found this a lot when I started developing a media player a couple of years ago for a startup.
Oh, my God. Okay, and,
you know, we talk about the media players and cameras and all that stuff. And I got in the media player. And I was like, all right, I want to play this video. And I was like, okay, cool. Now I need these hooks. And I'm like, okay, that hook is not there. All right, I need this. I'm like, no, okay, we can kind of live without that. Okay, I need to do this. Like, no, I can't do that either. Okay. All right, okay, low bandwidth condition. What happens? Oh, this thing completely blows up. And I'm just like, wow, this thing is completely unusable unless I have a video file that's embedded into the application that's going to render in only portrait mode, and I don't want to do anything to it. like that's when it will work. It's like this perfect MVP happy approach of like, here's going to work. And that's kind of how I feel about the media player APIs in Android. And then thankfully, you know, the Google recognizes, I mean, it's such a huge problem that Google recognized it and went and built their own SDK called ExoPlayer, which helps runs, you know, from what I hear, helps run YouTube, runs Google Play Movies, and they open source that. And thank goodness for them, because that's what I ended up using to do this media player thing I had to do, which was like HLS streaming content. Like, because without that, it would have been nothing. And that's one of the frustrating things of like, you have a company that's building its operating system, and the media control stuff is so jacked up that the people in your company aren't even going to use it. Or like, no, I'm not even touching that. That's garbage. And they go and they build their own thing, and then YouTube uses it. Movie Play, you know, Google Play uses it. And it's just one of those things like, wow, like the people getting into it are like, I want to play a movie. And it says, yeah, you know, you Google, it says use Media Player. And then you run into a wall. And then you spend the next however long trying to get going up on some other type of SDK. That just drives
me. And the worst thing is like it'll work for 70% of the case, but that last, there'll be that 20% because like, you know, when you're testing or something, they'll bring like, you know, your designer or your product manager will come with the device and then you're like, I don't know why it doesn't work. It works on my phone. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, okay, let me figure that out. And then you spend another 1 hour and then next thing you know, you're tearing your hair apart. It's just, it's pretty frustrating. It's media player, like it, I know, yeah, I mean, even I've, and we've talked about this, right, like the audio stuff, like apparently they've improved that with like later versions of Android, but a lot of ideas that I had, because I mean, you know, we share a sound engineering background, right, a lot of these ideas that I had, I just like gave up on because it was like, oh, it's just too difficult, I don't want to have to deal with it, you know.
What about the camera? How do you like the camera?
Oh, damn. Like, you know, so, I mean, for context for listeners, like, I think, like, the first three or four times that Don and I met and we started to talk, this was at when I was working my last startup, like, Wedding Party, which was, you know, use the camera a lot. Almost invariably, like, you know, it was, if you wanted to get me fired up and, like, really mad, you just had to bring up the camera APIs and I would go on a rant. And, like, Don kind of, I think, enjoys some of those days. So
it's always fun.
The camera. Yeah, the camera API is, I mean, and this is almost like a known thing. So, like, I don't necessarily think we need to go into the details, but like, the camera APIs are pretty, it's a mess. So, there are like so many things, right? And, you know, our fragmented was, a tongue in cheek kind of thing. But, it is kind of a real problem. Like, you know, the APIs are not as easy to deal with as you would think. And, you know, multiple OEMs, there is a reason that, you know, people complain about this. This isn't just that, oh, they don't know how to deal with it, or like, you know, they're not like good enough developers to understand how the framework works and just like deal with it. Like, I don't understand why you're, it isn't about that. Yes, there is a solution to all of these problems. And if you spend enough time, you will be able to solve a lot of these things. But the point is, if you truly want developers to like, you know, gallop and move forward and like make the ecosystem better, build better apps, you got to like give the tools and handle these problems, right? If you make something so difficult, like chances are they're not going to build the best outcome that you're aiming for.
Yeah.
Right?
And it was interesting that you're saying something about the, you know, the different like cameras and like how everything's changed with API levels and all that kind of stuff. You know, we talked about that previous. I actually tweeted something last week about, I forget what, something about SDK level or whatever, and someone replied back like, oh, and it was a tongue-in-cheek snarky comment of like, that's great, I'll finally be able to use that in about 5 years. Meaning that like, hey, this new SDK, SDK came out, but they're not going to be able to rely on that SDK until the majority of the market uses it, which then comes back to, I think this is one of the biggest core issues that we have probably with Android, is everything in itself, like the entire, and like this is a, one of the Flutter GDEs brought this up, the entire UI framework is packaged with the operating system. And that becomes an issue because if you need to update it, you got to update the operating system. Like it's almost like we should have this like bare bones operating system that ships with an update. And then you can almost ship like support libraries, these different, you know, libraries. It could be the SDK for the views. It could be the SDK for all these other things that we can iterate on much quicker. And that feels like it would solve a lot of these things. I mean, we still have some, of course, other issues, but.
Right. And I think we're heading in that direction, but it's just that time cannot come fast enough. You know, it's because it's just so frustrating because until then, like we still have to deal with a lot of these problems, right? I don't know about you, but I mean, we all love Android Studio, but I've been I've been a little frustrated recently with some of the Android Studio stuff that I've been running into, right?
Like what?
Instant Run doesn't work. Yeah. And then like this whole build thing, right? It was so weird. I'll put a Stack Overflow like question. I actually ran into this issue, right? Where eventually the solution, I think this is the migration between 3.0 to 3.1. And this is 3.1 stable, okay? So this isn't me, because I obviously have a canary and like a beta build that I just, you know, like where I'm on like the latest. And when things break there, I understand that's acceptable, right? But this was a stable release where like I upgraded my stable version from, I think it was 2.something to 3.0 or 3.1, right? I don't recall. I'll paste the Stack Overflow question. Mm-hmm. And things just started breaking. And like the solution in the end was to nuke my project idea folder.
Yep.
Like that was the solution. Yep. I don't know. I still don't know why that worked. I did it because I was like, you know, at my wit's end. And I was like, I will try anything at this point because it is really frustrating to have to like clean and rebuild and clean and rebuild. And you know what? For the most part, it's kind of working now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that like frustrates me. You mentioned some time back about like, you know, the memory leak and like the design preview. I didn't even realize maybe that's what like, because my MacBook, which is like a pretty beefy machine, you know, like for all practical purposes, this is like, you know, a machine that should take care of like most of your concerns, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I'm gung-ho about like spending as much money as humanly possible to get the best machine that I can.
Agreed.
Because I think it does reap benefits, right? But even my MacBook like chokes sometimes, you know, it's really hard because Android Studio is just like taking up all like the memory, right? And I don't know if it's maybe an IntelliJ thing or an Android Studio thing, but the fact remains, it is not like things come to a crawling halt, right? The emulators now, for some reason, like I can't seem to work like with emulators anymore, right? It's either the emulators are just like destroying my machine or like, you know, things don't work the same way. I'll give you a quick example, right? Like Firebase, you know, the whole Twitter digits now migrated to Firebase, right? So Firebase now holds the SMS authentication thing, right? That's something that doesn't work anymore on emulators. It used to work before. It doesn't work after they migrated to Firebase. You can't use it on emulators.
And
I'm like, oh my God. So like signing into the system, I have to like actually find a workaround when I'm on my emulator, right? And at that point, I'm like, why do I use an emulator again? It's not like I can just like, I'll just keep a device stand like handy and I'll just keep connecting it, right? It's just a lot of these small things that I found myself being really frustrated by. And
yeah.
I'm hoping this changes because I know the Android Studio team is like, you know, on the top of their game. But it's still frustrating. Like, I don't want to have to deal with these things. Why am I dealing with these things?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like I'm always re-indexing. Me and my teammates are just constantly, we're just re-indexing. And I can't do anything because my entire CPU is just like maxed out because I'm re-indexing for whatever reason. I don't know why it's re-indexing. It's just random. I'll open something up. The emulators, which you brought up, is great. I'll have... One of the things I've recently started doing is every time I fire up a brand new emulator, I go into the emulator settings and then I go in and I disable the save state. Like that's just complete, for me, it's like instant run. Like it just does not work. Just puts my app into like this like cyclone disabled state. I don't know. And I just have to completely turn it off because it doesn't work.
I know the save state thing, like I've run into like a lot of problems, right? I think especially if you get it to a bad state, like then it just never works. So then I'm like, oh my God, just nuke the damn state and like just give me a regular emulator.
Yeah, so I just go into settings and I just turn it off immediately. So every time I turn my emulator off, it just, you know, it just doesn't save the state, which makes it way more predictable. And that's ultimately, I think, everything that I'm after right now. In this entire podcast we talked about, the one thing I'm after is predictability. Like I want to be able to say I hit this run button or this instant run button, then I'm going to get consistent results. Because if I get inconsistent results one or two times and it burns 5 to 6% of my time, I will probably never use that again. Because...
Right. Oh, yeah, 100%.
I can't trust it. It's broken my level of trust. It's not predictable anymore and I need to be able to continue to move on. Imagine if you're using a command line client and it just gave you random results. Like, you'd probably never use it again.
Right. I mean, as is true with life, yeah. Right? Trust is very easy to break, but it's really hard to build back up. I feel like that's the story of Instant Run, right?
Mm-hmm.
They brought it out early and like, you know, people don't trust it. And like, I still am hesitant to trust it because like, you know, I've been burnt once and I'm like, I don't know if I want to try this again.
Yeah. And it's also one reason why unless I am forced to by a client, I steer clear of Canary Channel builds because it's literally like walking on broken glass. Like, sure, it's possible, but I guarantee I'm going to get cut at some point. And that cut is usually going to be of like, I can't build. I don't know why I'm building. I just burned 3 hours because of some weird, you know, bug. And I do like helping the community as much as possible. But usually when I'm working with a client or something like that, my main focus is providing them the service in which I'm there to do, which is building an app or helping do whatever I'm doing. And I can't be spending my time providing bugs back to Google during that time. So I usually stay on
Stable. Also, like as a contractor, how stupid does that look, right? Like you're brought in to build this thing, and you know, like someone walks by like, hey, how's it going? I was like, oh, and I'm just like, you know, the tooling, I'm just like, there's some problem with the tooling, so I'm just like trying to figure this out. Like, that is not a very professional response. Yeah. Like, especially when you're being billed, you know, by the minute. So yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong, I don't think I will never, you'll have to pry Android Studio from my dead hands. I will never back to Eclipse. Like, it's not happening. Don't even try. I will go back to a text editor before I go back to Eclipse.
Run those Gradle commands yourself. Right? So I guess like the point is, and I know like in this episode is almost like, you know, like a grievance kind of episode. But the point is, I think the intention is there, where we all understand where it needs to improve. It's just that I also think it's important to acknowledge that these problems exist, right? Because the worst thing that can happen is you're like, oh, yeah, it's fine. Like, you know, maybe this will work, but like, you know, oh, they're working on it. I understand that, but I think it's also very critical, especially with a lot of these new frameworks coming out with Flutter and React Native. I know many native developers sort of have like an instinctive, like repulsive reaction with like Flutter and like React Native and anything non-native. Uh-huh. But then you also have to understand, because I'm personally finding it really hard to convince other, like, you know, web developers and other people who want to contribute to like my code base. They're like, wait, why can't we just like use something like React Native or use a web view, right? I mean, don't get me started on web views, but then, you know, they're like, but sometimes it's hard for me to like sort of say no, because, you know, they're right. Like, the amount of time it takes to like actually build a native shouldn't be, yes, we understand it'll be a little more than, you know, maybe one of these shared frameworks, but at some point it becomes really hard even for me to justify. If I am battling the framework and I understand the framework like so well, then there's inherently some problem here, right?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we're ultimately trying to say here is that, you know, a lot of people in the community, especially on the social platforms, will, and I'm a big proponent of this, I attempt to never say anything negative on social platforms. It may read as negative. I don't mean it that way. And what I mean by that is, if I type a tweet in or something into a various social network and I always reread it, if it sounds like I'm complaining or anything of that nature, then I will try not to post it. There's been weird occasions where I have, but anyway, a lot of people don't post things that are... provide, you know, constructive criticism. And I think that's what we're trying to be here, is like to let folks know that, hey, these are problems that are out there, and they're very frustrating to people. And I've actually known a number of developers who have left Android strictly because they were too frustrated working in the platform. And I see that happening more and more. And you bring that up with the React Native folks, and you see this from the business perspective too. It's like, all right, well, why can't that be a React Native component? Why can't that be a web view? Because we're going to have to build that in iOS and Android. And answering that question is getting more and more difficult, and especially as we encounter more of these more difficult problems. So it's just one of those things that I think that folks, it's okay to feel this way, to feel that, you know, hey, I hate having to deal with lifecycle. I hate having to deal with these weird core components. I hate build times, or this XML, you know, bracket tag stuff really stinks. Like, that's a normal feeling, and that's okay to feel that way. Just know, I think there are people out there working on it. I just wish it was a lot better right now.
Right. And I think you said this key phrase, which I think is so critical, and I think it's so important, right? Constructive criticism. I think that's so important, right? It's easy to go on a rant, and like I feel in some ways like I did go on a rant like in this episode, but the point is, I feel sometimes it is important to criticize, but like not with the intention of just like, you know, criticizing without like the aim to improve, right? Constructive criticism is really hard, but I think it's so crucial here, because that's the only way we can move forward, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's the only way we can move forward. So, and this definitely shouldn't be considered as like a complaining fest, even though it may seem like one. These are just things that have irritated us and continually still do, kind of act like little mini cat scratches over time. And that's kind of death by a thousand scratches is the best way I like to think of it. So it's, again, thanks for everyone who's worked on it and who are working on fixing these solutions. Hopefully some of these grievances of ours kind of help shine some light on some of the areas as real world developers, some of the things we're all encountering. And it's not just Kaushik and I. These topics have come from conversations that we've had from with other developers on multiple different teams and friends and so forth as well.
Whew. So how are you feeling? A lot of weight off your shoulder?
Yeah, I'm gonna get off this padded therapy couch now and go get lunch.
All right. So if folks want to reach out to you and find out, you know, what your strategies are to deal with some of these things, and like, you know, if you know a good therapist to see for like Android development frustrations, where should they reach out?
For the best therapist, they should go exercise. But you can reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram at Don Felker. And what about if folks want to see how you're handling the death by a thousand cat scratches? How can they talk to you?
Kaushik Gopal on Twitter is usually the best way. But if you want something a little more positive and just see pretty car pictures and stuff, then on Instagram, Kaushik Gopal. So thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this one as much as we did. And we will catch you in the next episode.
See ya.
Before we wind the show down, I want to take a quick moment and thank Microsoft again for sponsoring today's show. They want to promote App Center. App Center is a continuous integration, delivery, and feedback service for your Android apps. You should check them out if you're looking for a CI solution or a UI testing solution. Head on over to appcenter.ms and spend less time managing your app lifecycle and more time coding. Because in the end, that's what makes us all happy. Thanks again for sponsoring today's show, Microsoft. That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.